From Cheyenne to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly double dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but we're here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, a former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Hey friends, welcome back to Let's Talk Wyoming. Well, it has been yet another week of covering the Wyoming legislature. Whole lot of stuff going on there. But I want to start with something a little different. This is a podcast where we talk about things from a conservative viewpoint. And so I want to talk about something, made a little news. I saw some different social media posts, some folks talking about this. And it brought back my time in the legislature, and something that I would hear very often, and something that I think needs or deserves a little bit of a rebuttal. There was a television interview, I think it was Wyoming News Now, out of Casper, I think they're out of Casper, who interviewed one of the representatives. She's the head of the Wyoming Freedom Caucus, Representative Rachel Rodriguez Williams. And I don't have all of the context around the interview because, quite frankly, it's not important to this discussion. What I have is the clip that was isolated and then sort of went around the social media sphere with people commenting on it. And it's Representative Rodriguez Williams saying the legislature has an obligation to really take a stance on dictating morality. That was her quote. That's the quote from the news program. And people kind of lost their minds. And I heard this when I served in the legislature. And sometimes I would engage and have a conversation one-on-one with somebody, but sometimes I just ignored it. But the reality is, legislating morality is an inescapable role of being a lawmaker. Okay? This one of the most common cries about you can't legislate morality. It's often used to argue against politics rooted in some kind of ethics or religious principles, somehow implying that laws should always remain neutral or purely procedural. But this is just not true. It's flawed thinking. It's flawed conservative thinking, and it's just flat wrong. In reality, all legislation is a form of morality. Every policy decision reflects a judgment about right or wrong, about just or unjust. So the question is not whether morality should be legislated, but rather whose morality will shape the laws that govern society. And when you hear people make this cry, usually that's what they're trying to say, and they're not saying it right. But some people honestly believe that morality is not a part of lawmaking, which is just fundamentally not true. Every law is a reflection of moral values. I mean, just consider, you know, the most basic prohibitions we have in our legal system. We have laws against murder, theft, fraud. These are not arbitrary rules. They exist because we as a society have deemed these actions morally unacceptable. Take something like prostitution. The reason we have prostitution as illegal, because we as a society have decided that families who might be walking down the street of any street in Wyoming with their children, don't want to see people engaging in prostitution and in the act of prostitution. That's a decision that was made. Those laws that were enacted are laws that reflect a moral system. And even laws that don't even seem overtly moral are. I mean, tax codes have morality in them, zoning regulations. They're grounded in some kind of like ethical consideration. Taxation policy is built on ideas of fairness and, you know, justice in the economics. Zoning laws are about private property rights generally, and the common good as well. So, you know, when we hear these things, the reality is public policy decisions are always some kind of moral trade-off. And the bigger question, the one that I think people are trying to argue, is that whose morality is going to shape the laws of the country. In general, in this country, in the United States of America, Judeo-Christian values have been the backbone of how our laws were founded, essentially. In other countries, they're Islamic law. In other countries, there are other senses of right and wrong. But that the question about, you know, legislating morality or not legislating morality, it often means, you know, people who say this, they claim that morality cannot be legislated. What they really mean is that, in another instance, what they really mean is that laws can't make people moral. And that is absolutely true. Okay. We have laws prohibiting murder. This does not eliminate homicide. We have laws against theft, prostitution, go down the list. But there's not an argument against moral legislation. You can't use that to make the argument that we shouldn't do it. It's simply a recognition of our human nature, right? You cannot make people be moral with laws, or at least not everybody. You can make a lot of people. I'm not going to commit murder. You're probably not going to commit murder. You don't want to go to jail for life, or you don't want to be killed by the death penalty. So the role of law is not really to perfect humanity, but to essentially establish a acceptable behavior, the conduct of acceptable behavior in our society as we all interact amongst ourselves. So a society without any kind of moral legislation would be one without prohibitions on violence, exploitation, those kinds of things. I mean, think about it like the Wild Wild West. Before this state became a state, when it was much more wild and had no dictates, the person with the biggest gun, the meanest, the most violent person, had the most sway over everybody. And people lived in fear and terror. I think Margaret Thatcher has a great quote about, and I'm not going to get it right now, I'll try to find it and try to get it right, but just about capitalism and freedom and why those things are so, and why they go hand in hand, and that why capitalist countries tend to be the most freest on the planet. And in most senses, it's because economic law sets a level playing field. So your big gun doesn't matter. You don't get to bully or terrorize people. And people are free that way. The point of laws in a capitalist society is to level the playing field and then let people, as their ability allows, rise. So all laws are moral. And, you know, the real debate, and I think the debate that some people maybe were having about the quote that Rachel Rodriguez, Representative Rachel Rodriguez Williams, was making, was that they were probably most likely angry or arguing over her form of morality. And that's really where the fight is, right? So from progressive to moderate to libertarian to more conservative or Christian, this is the fight is in that parameter. It isn't that lawmakers don't enact laws based on a frame of morality. It's whose frame of morality gets to dictate that. So I thought this was just a good discussion, because I always want to bring back, or at least have an opportunity to bring back, my conservatism, what I believe is true, and why I think the way I do based on what I understand about conservatism. There's a great quote that I think probably supports this argument that you can't make people moral, but it's Dr. Martin Luther King's quote about, "It may be true that the law cannot make a man love me, but it can keep him from lynching me." And I think that's pretty important. That's the basis of why we as a society decide, you know, what we're going to tolerate and not tolerate, and we set up laws. So this isn't a rebuke of the people who were concerned about what she said. I understand their point. It's just more of a clarification so that, you know, we can think about these things through the conservative lens and why we believe what we believe. Anybody who says that, you know, you can't dictate morality, you can't legislate morality, it's not true. That's all they do at the Capitol in Wyoming, and that's all they do at the United States Capitol. All those decisions, the mundane, the more sensationalized, all of those decisions are a decision about right and wrong, about a code of morality. So for the new lawmakers who might be listening to this, you need to understand that. People who go into that chamber and somehow think that they are lofty and high because they don't bring any sense of morality are just lying to themselves, and usually making really foolish mistakes. Understand that you are making morality, and that you've chosen a side, whatever it may be, whether you are more progressive left, maybe you're more moderate left, maybe you're right in the middle, maybe you're more conservative. You've made a choice. And you are essentially legislating morality. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with some of the top bills this week we saw in the legislature. Some interesting debate, especially around the 50% property tax reduction that I really wanted to play some big chunks. So you're going to have to pardon me, but there's going to be you're going to spend a little bit of time listening to debate, because if you didn't listen to it, it's really worth listening to. I think you're going to learn a lot. And then a couple of other hot button topics that are near and dear to my heart, protecting women's private spaces. This is a bill that I really like, and so I want to talk about it. So right after the break, we'll get to that. Hold on. Welcome back, guys. So Senate File 69 took up a lot of time, and it's going to continue to take up a lot of time. It's passed the Senate. It began as a 50% across the board property tax cut with no backfill to the local communities that depend on those dollars for services to the public. It was amended to down to 25%. There were amendments to put in backfill. Ultimately, on third reading, any other amendments to add backfill were denied, were rebuffed, and an amendment brought by Majority Floor Leader Tara Nethercott to take it back up to 50%, no backfill, 2-year sunset, passed. And there was a lot of debate around this bill, and obviously you've heard me talk about it here on the show, concern for our local communities, particularly our small communities. The thing about this across-the-board 50% with no recognition of communities that have had large property tax increases and those who have not, and also no, you know, look at our hardship counties, which, you know, this week I interviewed Representative Judy Williams, who talked a little bit about hardship, how we determine hardship. In Wyoming, we have counties who, under raising one mill, can bring up to $5 million. One mill. That would be Campbell County, an energy-rich county. One mill in some counties can't even raise $300,000. And so that inequity is the reality of the 23 counties that spread across this beautiful state of Wyoming. And so oftentimes, one-size-fits-all solutions are really not good because they don't work, right? It's a little bit like how I talk about education and school choice, that every child learns differently. So parents need all kinds of tools in the toolkit to educate all of their children. So this property tax, which, you know, folks have asked for, we've seen communities that have most definitely seen incredible rises in property tax that aren't good and that have been difficult. And those folks deserve relief. But then I think we have a whole lot of other people who've glommed on, right? Because, you know, one thing you learn, one thing that's probably universal about politics is don't ever vote against somebody's pocketbook. So I think there's a lot of folks out there who've decided, yeah, I could use that relief too. I want it. Whether they do or don't. We all want money back in our pockets, right? And it's taken on a life of its own. And now people really truly believe that across the board, there has to be some property tax. Well, they're probably going to get it. The Senate just passed 50%, no backfill, 2-year sunset. There is in that 2-year span, there'll also be on the ballot a property tax amendment initiative that was passed through collecting of signatures. That's going to go before the voters in 2026, about the time this piece of legislation is sunsetting, which is also 50% across the board, no sunset. So that's forever into the horizon, 50% cut, no backfill. And the voters will pass it. That's the voters will pass it because they don't vote against their own pocketbooks. And it's very difficult to make the argument that there are services that are going to be harmed by this. Not until they really truly feel it. And maybe in the next 2 years, they really will feel it. Certainly in our small communities, they will. They'll notice it immediately, and it will be painful. In a county that may only be able to employ 2 sheriffs, they're going to be down to 1. Or maybe they'll have to share a sheriff with somewhere else. Roads that were plowed once won't be. People who live somewhere and they need to get to town may have to figure that out themselves. And on it goes. Developmental, you know, issues with children, the elderly, services to our poor, those sorts of things. So the debate on the Senate side was really quite interesting. It has all kinds of implications for the discussion. And I want to start with a really interesting, and I think well thought out argument against backfill by Senator Chris Rothfuss, who is a Democrat from Albany County. And I think he was echoing a lot of the feelings of all the members, Republicans and Democrats in the Senate, who oppose backfill. And I think he explains the no backfill, because backfill comes at the expense of our savings accounts. So let's go to that first clip, Senate File 69, third reading debate in the Wyoming Senate. The amendment on the floor is to put in backfill. Here is Senator Chris Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, you know, these cuts are going to be brutal to our communities. The proponent of this amendment is absolutely right that cuts to property taxes that are of the magnitude that we're talking about, whether it's 25 or 50%, will hurt the people of our districts, of the state of Wyoming. But that's what was asked for. The idea that we would use savings to mitigate the implications of the tax cuts, to make it seem, Mr. President, like no tax cuts occurred, is honestly unfair, I think, to the future of the state and to the folks that really put a lot of good work into establishing a structure of savings where we can sustain the hard times. The LISRA was not designed to pay for tax cuts. It was to pay for the economic instability of the state due to the fluctuations in the economy. We know that we are in a good time right now as a state. Our revenues are strong, and yet our strong revenues right now can't sustain some of the things that we're talking about. The idea that we would now start burning through our savings to pay for the tax cuts in the good times, really is detrimental to that long-term planning of how the state manages the hard times. And we know they're right around the corner. They always are. So, Mr. President, I don't think the people of the state of Wyoming can afford the idea of a backfill, which we know is always temporary, right? We know it's unsustainable in the long run. It's just a few years where we pretend we don't have problems before we go off the cliff. We have to be realistic about the implications of property tax cuts. Backfills try to make an imagination where we don't have to accept the downside, but we can have the upside. And we can do that for maybe a couple of years by burning through our capital. I think we need to hold against backfills. We need to look at this consideration, look at this policy decision with our eyes wide open, and the people of the state need to be looking at it with their eyes wide open and understand the implications of a tax cut, rather than us trying to create some machinations to pretend that they don't have implications, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator.
So that was a really good explanation of, you know, the downfalls of backfilling, particularly backfilling that may have to be permanent, because it shifts the burden away from the people who use the services, and it puts it on directly onto our savings, which is a completely different animal. The savings accounts that we have and the savings we have come directly from mineral wealth in general, and that is a legacy for all the people of the state, whereas property taxes don't actually come to the state. They go directly to our local communities, and they're there to help fund the services that we all need. If anybody thinks that they don't need a public service, I would ask, have you driven on a public road today? Because you have. It probably took you to your home, and the value of your home depends upon some of those public services. Without them, your house wouldn't be as valuable. So it all plays together, right? There's nothing, there's, you know, government, government giving us the services that we choose to allow through taxation is part of what we do. It's not a dirty word to say that we as citizens have decided to tax ourselves to a certain level so that we can get a certain thing collectively together that we alone couldn't afford to do. I certainly could not afford the 9 miles of blacktop asphalt that comes from the interstate down to my subdivision. I could not afford to do that. My husband and I definitely couldn't. So this is, I thought it was a really good discussion of why the Senate, I think the majority of the Senate has taken this no backfill position. First of all, they believe that the voters who are asking for this need to, you know, receive it eyes wide open to the effects of it and not be insulated or isolated from the negative effects of this. And also that we should not do any kind of backfill that would drain our savings accounts because they're so critically important to the long-term viability of the state. And they really are. So the debate kind of went on. It was a very, very interesting. We had, you know, quite a few people obviously in support of this. The next one is a representative from Campbell County who talked a little bit about the fact that the sky isn't falling. And he wanted to push back over any argument that somehow this was going to bring devastation. Now, keep in mind, he's in Campbell County, where a 1 mil levied can raise $5 million. So it's definitely not a hardship county. But let's hear this from Senator McEwen. Hold for that.
Senator McEwen.
I just want to reemphasize, I handed out a piece of paper by county on how much their budget is made up from property taxes. And one of the last speakers, I'm really impressed at what they can do with 2% of their budget. Senior centers, ballparks. At the end of the day, we need to understand how property tax is given out. And trust me, I'm taking heat from home. I got an email from one of those politicians that runs the localist of governments. In other words, not a county. Who said, what are we gonna do if we cut property taxes? It's not even gonna affect cities, towns, and municipalities. And as we go on this, if we do this, we take the county and we take it down to 1%. There's other counties that are going to get hit a little harder. But I'm telling you, the sky isn't falling. And I support what the senator from the Ivy Tower said. This is what people asked us to do. Thank you, Mr. President.
Well, he's not wrong to a certain extent. This is what some people need and have asked. As I already discussed earlier, certainly it's caught on fire across the state and people have an expectation that they're going to get property tax relief. What I would say, though, as someone who's been observant and involved in politics for quite a long time, is that people's opinions can change like that really fast. So I don't think a good excuse for why you are voting yes for something is because the people asked for it, mainly because that can change very quickly. And there's so much nuance around what they want. You can ask someone if they feel they need relief. And if you don't ask them that if that relief came at the expense of A, B, C, or D, you aren't really getting a full answer, right? And so you have to be careful politically about that. But, you know, these lawmakers are under the gun because politics in Wyoming has, you know, since this last election and since we've seen the Freedom Caucus bring in so many out-of-state organizations like Young Americans for Liberty, who have been actively texting into Senate districts right now, these last few weeks, hitting our state senators who they think might not do this, hitting them hard, right? Sending out texts to voters, trying to hurt them or trying to intimidate them. And so all these guys, this is a whole new paradigm. This is not the way politics was when I was in the legislature at all. And certainly not this kind of out-of-state money being brought in by people in the state who want to sort of use that muscle to get what they want. And so these folks are under a very different reality, political reality, as they sit in those chambers and make decisions. I mean, they have people up in the galleries above them with microphones looming over them, talking about them, going out on social media and just disparaging them as much as they can. It's a very different environment than when I was in. None of those things were happening at all. And I mean, I left in 2012. So it's a whole different world now. I'm going to end this discussion of the property tax debate over on the Senate this week, which I think was probably the best debate of the week this week. And so that's why I wanted to bring it to you with a final quote from Senator John Culp from Sweetwater County, who I think articulated very, very well this idea that the methodology that they're using, 50% across the board cut, doesn't fit. And that it doesn't work to just say, this is what we're going to do. Because let's be clear, I mean, these are lawmakers. There's a lot of things they could do. They can include scale. They could change, you know, they could do all kinds of things. And they could even do it around not having to do backfill by basing property tax cuts on property tax increases. Because we have some counties that didn't see hardly increase at all, and some that saw 50% or even higher. And so, but they're not doing any of that. And they could do that. And I think this is the frustration that you're going to hear in this senator, because he's not wrong in saying that certainly this body could do those things and could, you know, not try to pin this one size fits all on everybody. And you're going to hear in his discussion this frustration about the politics that's being played. Like, I'm going to get zinged for having this position or not having that position. So let's end this discussion of the Senate file on property tax reform rebate with Senator John Culp.
Senator Culp, for your second time.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to repaint this mural we've been hearing about to my fellow colleagues. You know, I'm going to explain my position. I think it's a little too simple to say, oh, it's all about not backfill or backfill. I'm good with 25%, and I understand it's going to hurt. It won't be the end of the world for most situations. However, for special districts, it is. It's pretty bad. But it's not so simple to say, oh, you're for this or you're for all that. It's more nuanced than that. Situation is, yes, the state of Wyoming, we have to ensure the future. We have to, as stewards of that future. Our retirement account for the state is one of them, the PMTF. There's a lot of vehicles we have. We can't deplete that. That's true. But this one-size-fits-all approach, and then playing a three-card Monty, that somehow you're either all for this or you're all for that, isn't honest. The honest truth is, it's more complicated than that. The honest truth is, we have to balance the future of the state with current impacts. The honest truth is, this is a simple approach that hurts people that other folks probably don't have intentions to hurt, but it does. So I'm not going to be painted into a corner. To be clear, I support a 25% property tax reduction without backfill. That's the clear position I have. And to say anything else or to paint people into a corner saying it's either, you know, it's either backfilled or it's no backfill, that's not honest. The honest truth is that's where I sit on this. I think 50% is a bridge too far. I think 50% is devastating to my community because of the facts that we don't take under consideration. It's too simple. One size fits all, too simple. And it hurts wrong people. And on top of this, we're talking about counties. The counties have a control over their mill levy. They can change that. So they haven't. So of course, we're for local government up until we're not for local government. I think that this answer is in the hands of the boards of county commissioners. They're the ones overtaxing. you know, for their particular counties, they're the ones who could decrease the mill levy. I don't know, you know, why on earth do we think that we can just clobber everybody over the head with one-size-fits-all approach? That's my concern about the way we're going about it. Not that we don't need property tax relief. The methodology just doesn't fit. Thank you, Mr. President.
So, Senator Kolb, John Kolb from Sweetwater County, Rock Springs, I think the clobbering is coming. I think the clobbering is coming. I think we're going to see 50% across the board, little to no backfill, and if it is, it'll be temporary, coming. This bill is out of the Senate now. It'll cross over, I believe, next week. I think crossover should be somewhere toward the end of next week. I haven't looked at the calendar to see when it officially is. It means the bill will head over to the House to be worked. And then once they do that, it'll come back. The House has debated some of these property tax relief bills. Some really interesting debate. Today we heard some debate on a property tax relief bill that I thought was good. I haven't pulled the clip, and maybe in the future I will, but I will just paraphrase for you. This was from Representative Martha Lawley talking about what happens when property tax rates go down, services decrease, and how that actually can affect a homeowner's insurance, because of the way that our fire districts, our fire stations are rated. I know that's true. I live, you know, a ways away from town. And when we built this home and we applied for, you know, our homeowner's insurance, we actually had to get a certification to say how far down the road. We were only 9 miles from the nearest fire station. Thankfully, they had just built a fire station. But prior to that fire station being built, homeowner insurance for folks out here was higher, you know, for obvious reasons. The fire truck takes longer to get here, more damage, or the more chance that the home can't even be saved. And so your insurance is going to be higher. So one of the realities, and in the discussion on the House side today, was that the fact that, you know, these ratings, when they go down, when the ratings go down, that means the insurance is going to go up. And so for people who might, you know, get a property tax cut in some communities, they're not going to realize that entire cut because they're going to pay more for the decrease in services in the increase of their homeowner's insurance. So just to give you a flavor, and I'm sorry I didn't pull that clip, but that was today on the House side. I'm recording this on Thursday, February 6th. So that was today. You can go check out the afternoon discussion in the House of Representatives if you want to find that clip. I promised at the beginning of this that we were going to talk a little bit about women's privacy, and we've seen a couple of interesting bills about women's sports and some other things. The bill I'm referencing is House Bill 72, Protecting Women's Privacy in Public Spaces Act. It's a bill that I support. I really like. I think it's a good bill. It's a bill that anecdotally I actually have, and I'm not going to share the details of stories because they affect women in my community who work in government, but who I know are following this bill very closely because they care about it so much because of issues that they have had. And so if you believe that this isn't affecting people, you'd be wrong. And we'll talk more about it. I am running long. We're well over 30 minutes, and I don't want to have these podcasts be too terribly long because everybody's time is valuable. So we'll get into more of the House stuff next week. But until then, thank you so much for listening. I will be bringing you, hopefully next week, a whole bunch of news on House and Senate and the discussion of crossover and where we go with House bills going to the Senate and Senate bills going to the House. But until then, everyone, I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Super Bowl Sunday is coming. I know this will make you hate me, but I have family in Kansas City, so I have to give a shout out and say go Chiefs for my mother, who is the Kansas City Chiefs' biggest number one fan. So for Mom, go Chiefs. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend.